John chapter 11. I think most of you will know the story. I'm just going to focus, I'm just going to read the first six verses for us. On my notes, I've headed it. I haven't got a PowerPoint this evening. The sermon title I want just to have is The Joy of the Resurrection. The Joy of the Resurrection. All right? That's what I want you to take away. And the key verse, this illness will not end in death, which is found in verse 3. So John 11. Now a man named Lazarus was sick. He was from Bethany, the village of Mary and her sister Martha. This Mary, whose brother Lazarus was laying sick, was the same one who had poured perfume on the Lord and wiped his feet with her hair. So the sisters sent word to Jesus, "Lord, the one you love is sick." When he heard this, Jesus said, "This sickness will not end in death. No, it is for God's glory, so that God's Son may be glorified through it." Jesus loved Martha and her sister and Lazarus. Yet, when he heard that Lazarus was sick, he stayed where he was 2 more days. What we read here is that Jesus loved this family. That's really, really important to understand. Jesus loved these two sisters and this gentleman, Lazarus, that was sick. And he gets this message from them that the brother Lazarus is ill. If you know your Bible, you'll know that Mary and Martha are very good friends with Jesus. The Gospels have introduced us to them before and how much Jesus thought of them. He often spent time in their house. It says Mary's wife pouring the perfume over Jesus' feet and those kind of things. There was a very special bond between Jesus and these people, probably to such a degree that in his public ministry, this was their home, was like his home. It seems to be the place where he often went to get away from the crowds and those kind. He just spends a lot of time there for him. So when brother Lazarus falls ill and keeps getting weaker, leaving the sisters with real fears for his life, they know that Lazarus needs help and they know who to go to. They send word to their good friend, Jesus. Because he's their friend and they're his friends. Notice exactly what they say. I'm going to pick this to part this evening. Notice exactly what they say. They say the message, end of verse 3, it says, "Lord, the one you love is sick." That's all they say. You notice they didn't say, "Lord, he's sick, please come and do something." There's no demands on Jesus. There's no telling him what to do. We're not even told that they ask him to come and make them better. I suspect they thought that knowing that Jesus loved them, the fact that this man was sick, it didn't really need to be said. It was so obvious what they were saying. It was so obvious what they wanted. Furthermore, note closely the basis on which they send the message to Jesus, what they were thinking. It says, "Lord, the one you love is sick." It's not, "Lord, you know that Lazarus means a lot, that you mean a lot to Lazarus, that Lazarus has served you, Lord, he's given you hospitality, you know, he's put up with you, he's paid for you, he's given you board and lodgings, he's given you, you know, free food, and he's publicized you, and he's defended you. Lord, Lazarus, he's not well. He needs your help." There's none of that. It's just, "Lord, the one you love is sick." It wasn't about Lazarus's love for Jesus. It was about Jesus' love for Lazarus. And John MacArthur, many of you will know of him. He said, writing on this verse, he says, if it's your love for Jesus that activates his blessing on your behalf, you will be blessed on a very irregular basis. If Christ operated in my life on the basis of my love for him, I would be in bad shape because my love is inconsistent and at times self-centered. Jesus is not motivated to come to your aid because you love him. He helps you because he loves you. And that's great. He helps us because he loves us. Just imagine if he were to respond and that the basis of how much help from him we got was the basis of how much help we give to him. If his love and care and compassion for us corresponded to how much we love and care for him, I think most of us often would be in pretty bad shape, as John MacArthur says. Thank God that he works on a basis of his love for us. Lord, the one that you love. And notice a third thing here as well. I think this is really quite significant. It says the one that you love is sick. Now, most of you will know that in the Greek there are at least three, often four, but there are three main words for love. There's philia love, there's agape love, and there's eros love, sexual love. Which one do you think the women, the sisters, said of Jesus, Lord, the one that you love is sick? Which of those three words do you think they mean? You've got the brotherly love, you've got the agape love, and then there's the erotic love. Yeah, you would think that, wouldn't you? The agape love. It's the philia love. It's the brotherly love. Lord, the one that you love as a brother. Lord, the one that you're affectionate to. The one that means a lot to you. He is sick. It's a small detail, but it's about brotherly love. It's about human love. It's about friendship love. There's nothing erotic about it. And it's not the love of another kind, the agape kind of love. I think that's a small but important detail that shows that Jesus didn't do and feel everything from this supernatural perspective, that actually he feels the way that we feel. He was God, but he was fully human. He wasn't so super spiritual that he doesn't understand human relationships. He wasn't, and it came to me, Dr. Spock. Is he Star Trek? Spock, yeah. Spock, okay, Spock. Star Trek, yeah. You know the guy with the ears? He's the man that doesn't do... All right. He's the man that doesn't do emotion. It's everything is logic, you know? And we might think that Jesus doesn't do emotion. He's so otherworldly that he's not going to understand how we feel. Truth is that Jesus had friends. He had relationships. We might say that Lazarus was Jesus' mate. He was his pal. They enjoyed, you know, being around together. Somebody he thought a lot of. Somebody whose company he sought out. Not just to give to him, but Jesus needed that level of relationship. He needed that level of friendship. If we read on, Jesus went to the tomb where Lazarus was, and he cried. How many of you have cried at a graveside? Most of us will have done. And Jesus cried at the graveside. And the Jews looking on said, look how much he loved him. See, they recognized that there was a relationship, there was a friendship here that meant a lot to Jesus. And the significance of that for us is that means that he understands our need for relationship and friendship as well. So that when you're lonely, when you feel that there's no one to love you, no one to care for you, when you feel that you're alone, you know that you can say, Lord, you know how I feel. Because his mate, Lazarus, he missed him. He was sad. Lord, the one you love. There was a friendship here, a deep friendship. When we're facing those times, know that Jesus knows what it is to value friendship and to miss it when it's not there. Hebrews chapter 4, very well-known passage, so important to keep in mind. Jesus, the Son of God, let us hold firmly to the faith that we profess, for we do not have a high priest who is unable to sympathize with our weaknesses, but as we have one who's every way been tempted in every way just as we are, yet without sin. We do not have one who's unable to sympathize with us. That's the point. When we feel lonely, when we feel we're missing someone, he knows. He's not just that God out there somewhere that doesn't really know what it is to be a human. He does. He was here. He wept at the grave of his friend Lazarus. Lazarus, Jesus, the one that you love, your mate, he's not well. 1 Peter chapter 5 verse 7 says, cast your care on him because he cares for you. We can go to him, we can tell him how we feel. He cares for us. And you know, when we cast our cares on him, it really is important that we leave those cares with him. Psalm 37 verse 5 says, commit your way to the Lord, trust in him, and he will do this. Commit your way to the Lord and trust in him. Mary and Martha committed their way, their situation to the Lord. Lord, the one you love is sick. They took it to him. They told him about the situation. Now, what they needed to do was not just tell him, not just commit it to him. They now needed to trust him as well. Committing and trusting go together. When you pray about something, when you take something to Jesus, when you tell him the situation, whether you tell him what you want him to do and ask him what you want him to do or not, when you're taking it to him, you are committing it to him. It is really important that you trust him with that as well, that you take it and leave it with him. Our problem is that so often we take the matter to the Lord, we ask his help, and then we carry on living in the same way. We carry on worrying. We don't leave it with him. Commit your way to the Lord and trust him. What's the point in taking it to the sovereign Lord of heaven and earth who loves you if you're then going to carry on just as you were before? Worrying, is it going to work out all right? Of course it's going to work out all right. You've taken it to the Lord. Will I get through this? Of course you'll get through it because you've taken it to the Lord. He knows. Commit your way to the Lord. Trust in him. Trusting means to trust his goodness. Do you trust that Jesus is good? Do you trust that your God is kind? Do you trust that he's wise? Do you trust that he's powerful? Do you trust his nature and his character? What's your God like? If he means anything, then you can trust him. You'll leave it with him. It doesn't mean you'll understand it. Doesn't mean that you'll see what's going to happen at the end of it. Because these sisters certainly didn't anticipate what was going to happen. But the call is to trust him. Commit it and trust him. Believe, I've taken it to him. It will be okay. It cannot be otherwise because it's in God's care now. And God says he loves me. God says he cares for me. How do I know? Because he gave his one and only son for me. He's not going to let me go now. If he's done all that, how will he not also with us, give us all things? It says in Romans chapter 8. I think it's about verse 20, 29, 30. If he's given you Jesus, he will give you everything else you need. Take it to him, trust it to him, leave it with him. Don't carry it on. We trusted Jesus with our soul, haven't we? You trusted Jesus with your soul. You committed that to him to get you into heaven. The most important thing, then trust him with your life as well. You know, the Christian life is a life of faith. It's a life of trust. It's not just about our soul and whether he'll get us into heaven. It's about our everyday stuff. Anyway, let's move on. Because all of this is, with all of this, these sisters, and Lazarus, absolutely wouldn't have expected what happened over the next few days. I imagine them having sent word to Jesus, the friend, the one that you love is ill. I imagine them looking out every day, going to the door, looking out of the window continually, expecting him any moment to walk down the garden path. Hi guys, we're here, what's the problem? Let's get this sorted out. But what happened? Yet, when he heard that Lazarus was sick, it says in verse 6, he stayed where he was 2 more days. Literally, the literal translation says that so when he heard Therefore, when he heard, he stayed where he was. Strange love, isn't that? That is strange love. Lord, the one you love is sick, and so he stays where he was. He stayed there so long that when Jesus did eventually arrive, Lazarus had died. How could he do such a thing? What could possibly have been going through his mind? The grief, the pain, the sadness that he put this family through. Is that too strong a word to say? Had he have been there, he could have raised Lazarus. He could have stopped him. The fact that he didn't go meant that they went through grief. They went through sadness. They went through bereavement. They'd gone through the funeral. Had he have been there, and they said this to him, Lord, had you been here before, he would not have died. They were right. How could he really love them and yet let this happen to them? The answer and the explanation is in Jesus' words in verse 4. When he heard this, Jesus said, this sickness will not end in death. It is for God's glory, so that God's Son may be glorified through it. My heart has sang as I've looked at this. The other Friday, I did a funeral down at Bethesda. And these were the words I spoke on. This sickness will not end in death. These are just glorious words. Because it didn't end in death, did it? They went through death, but it didn't end there. The glory is the resurrection. This is our hope. This is what we've got. Because Jesus died, the first fruits of all who believe in him, we will rise again. This whole scenario was not ultimately about Lazarus or the sisters. This sickness will not end in death. No, it's for God's glory. It's for God's glory. So that God may be glorified through it. You see, Jesus was working to a different agenda. He was working according to heaven's agenda. This was about getting the maximum glory for God. This was to get people to think well of God. This wasn't just about, preserving life and health of his friends. This was ultimately about God. If we don't have that perspective, we're going to struggle big time with the ways of God on earth. We're going to struggle with what he allows. The more we can get ourselves to see things from his perspective, the easier life and events and circumstances will be that we encounter. The more we see ourselves as God's servants, the more submitted we are to him, like Jesus was, the more submitted to his ways and his purposes, the easier life will be. I'm not saying life will be easy. You know that we're not saying that it doesn't mean that we won't go through troubles and trials. We do. But the point is that we're not the center of the universe. God is, isn't he? He doesn't exist for us. We exist for him. Therefore, the more we get into the way of looking at things from his perspective, the better life will be for us, the more peace, the more contentment, the less stress, the less anxiety, because we will know that he's working things out for his glory. And the big thing is that we're taught in this incident is that specifically, sometimes sickness or even death in a believer is allowed for the glory of God. Even death is allowed for the glory of God. There are some Christian teachers, you will have heard them if you watch much of the God channels. You will have heard them that they'll say that sickness is always wrong. It's always against God's will. God didn't create the world with sickness, so he doesn't want it. Jesus came into the world to do away with sin. He always wants to heal it, therefore. I want to say, that is nonsense and poppycock. Have those people never read this passage? Therefore, when he heard this, he stayed where he was 2 more days. Because he heard of Lazarus, he stayed where he was so that Lazarus would die. He stayed where he was so that Lazarus would die. It is true that sickness and disease will not be part of the new heavens and earth. And as such, they're not part of God's ultimate plan. But we're not yet there yet, are we? This isn't heaven. Praise God, we will be raised. We will enjoy that heaven, but this isn't heaven. Heaven will be perfect. There will be no more sickness or crying or tears or suffering. No more aging, no more death. We still live in a broken world, a world that God is in the process of fixing. The death and the resurrection of Jesus makes it absolutely certain that the day will come when sickness and death will be no more. But we're not there yet. There's a little clip to show you at this point how Jesus is making the most in this our lifetime now. How he makes the most of the most difficult and obscure circumstance. Just a clip that I saw this week, and I thought it illustrates the point perfectly. Taking the scribbles, the things that seem to be messed up, and he uses them for the glory of God, changes them around. Of course, it's marvelous when God gives us a glimpse into the future kingdom by bringing healings, isn't it? Believe firmly that he does that at times. Of course he does, when his glory gets through in this way. But it's not the only way that he receives glory. God receives glory when he transforms our suffering into strength, when with compassion and care and unselfish love, when that's given and when it's received, when he gets somebody who thinks, I'm never going to cope with this, and they grow and they develop spiritually and their faith is strengthened and they're able to speak for the Lord and say, this is what God has done for me. Romans 5 verse 3 says that we rejoice in our sufferings because we know that suffering produces perseverance, and perseverance produces character, and character produces hope, and hope does not disappoint. See, the point in all of this is that Jesus' delay didn't mean that he didn't love them. He was just working to a different level, a different timing, a different agenda. In fact, his delay was because he loved them. He wanted to show them something deeper. Yes, he could have shown them, had he been there, he could have shown them that he could make someone better. But by delaying, he showed them that he got power over death. And that's what we really need to know, isn't it? Not just that we can be better, not just that we can manage to get through this life, but that at the end of it, there's resurrection. There's eternal life. There's new life, forever with the Lord. This illness will not end in death. If Jesus delays answering your prayers, it isn't because he doesn't love you. It isn't because he doesn't care. It's because he wants to do something even better. He may let things get worse, a lot worse. He may even allow a loved one. He may even allow us to go through death. but this illness will not end in death. Death is not the end. The joy of the resurrection, the glory of the resurrection, the thrill of the resurrection, this is what we have. This is what we have. Death may be part of the process, but it's not the end. Because of Jesus, we will be raised to life eternal with the Lord forever. Every believer, that's you. Have you taken time to think of that? You, when you die, will be raised to life to be with him when he comes. This isn't pie in the sky. We don't tend to think about death. But the truth is, if we don't think about death, we don't think about the resurrection. And if we think about the resurrection without thinking about death, then we miss its impact. Death for Jesus was not the end. And it won't be the end for us either. It won't be for those who we love who die in the Lord either. He was the first fruits of all who believe in him. Let me ask you tonight, do you believe in him? Do you believe in him? Have you trusted him? If you have, for all the other things that might be happening or might happen in your life, for the trials and the tribulations you might go through, know that he loves you. Know that he cares for you. There's a reason. You might not see it. The ladies didn't see it to start with. They were perplexed. Lord, if you'd have been here, this wouldn't have happened. They were grieving. They'd got the mourners in. The place is full of wailings and cryings and tears. Jesus goes to the tomb and he weeps. But it wasn't the end. He loved them. And resurrection came. That old hymn, "When Peace Like a River," has got the glorious hymn, "The sky, not the grave, is our goal. The sky, not the grave, is our goal." Hold on to that when you don't understand. When you don't see, then trust him. Commit your way to the Lord and trust him, and he will do it. This sickness will not end in death because the resurrection is coming. Let's sing about our glorious hope and our heaven that we've got to come as